UK Wine Show number 175. Wines of Barolo with Enrico Rivetto. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show. It's show number 175, the 25th of September, 2009. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show, we're talking with Enrico Rivetto from Rivetto Wines in Barolo. I had a lovely afternoon with Enrico. He showed me around and I have recorded three shows with him, actually. The first two, this week and next week, are looking at the wines he produces. And it's not just the big red wines that Barolo is famous for that are pretty good. We find out about some exciting new white wines, as well as why he prefers to use huge Slovakian oak barrels compared to French barriques. In the spotlight, we're looking at low alcohol wines. And finally, the mystery wine region this week. Now, the mystery region this week is France's only major single appellation region. That is, there's only one appellation for the region. It consists of three wine growing areas, Marne Valley, Côte de Blanc, and Côte de Sassenay. And 100 kilometers south is the Orb. Much of the appellation, including most of the better crus, are situated on the slopes of hills. However, the precarious nature of the weather means that blending occurs not just from the different villages, but also from several vintages. Have we ponder of that while we have the news? Coming up next with Jane.
Cheers, Chris. Direct Wines, owner of the Sunday Times Wine Club and Lathwaite's, is to launch a new mail-order wine club with Hong Kong's leading English language newspaper, the South China Morning Post. Direct Wines launched its operation in Hong Kong with an offer to HSBC Bank customers earlier this year, and they received double the number of orders expected and ran out of stock. Their move into Hong Kong follows the abolition of the 40% tax on wine last year, and according to CEO Simon McMurty, if Hong Kong proves a success, they have plans for China.
Lathwaite's are expanding overseas. They've been trading in the US for a year now under the guise of the Wall Street Journal Wine Club, and now setting up in Hong Kong. After dominating the UK wine scene, they're going to dominate the world. Someone else who sets a big shadow in the world is Nicholas Katina. What's happened to him, Jane?
Well, Decanter Magazine's Man of the Year 2009 is, in fact, Nicholas Katina, owner of the Argentinian winery Katina Zapata. A celebratory dinner was held in his honour in London this week, with 50 guests, including previous Men of the Year and other well-known wine personalities. At the dinner, Katina told how he was inspired to make world-class wine in Mendoza on a visit to Robert Mondavi's winery in Napa in the 80s, where he saw how a non-European country was making wines that could challenge France.
Congratulations to Nicholas. They certainly are one of Argentina's top wineries. I do like their Cabernet Sauvignons. Very yummy and also one of the more healthiest wines around. They've got really high levels of polyphenols and antioxidants due to the real high altitude that he expanded out in the Mendoza. What's the last story, Jane?
Well, over to Canada, and British Columbian wines are the focus of media attention and consumer outrage after revelations that bulk imported wine is being sold as British Columbian wine in liquor stores across the Canadian state. Three major wine companies, which are Vincor International, Andrew Peller, and the Mark Antony Group, are bottling and selling bulk imported wines with the wording "cellared in Canada" in fine print on the back label. This is causing confusion amongst consumers, who naturally assume the wines originate from British Columbia, because they're being sold in the British Columbia section of government liquor stores, but at a lower price. Apparently, the practice isn't just confined to British Columbia, but is said to happen across Canada. That's it from me this week, but don't forget to check out our website, 3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. British Columbians may be a bit annoyed about bulk wines, and we know what they are from last week's spotlight. Although these wines are often labelled as own brands, such as Tesco's Finest or something like that, or as in this case, they've given the impression the wine is from BC, even though it's only cellared in British Columbia. This type of thing is more common than you might imagine. Even in the UK here, we have a thing called British wine. Now, this is grape juice that was imported rather than wine that was imported into the UK and fermented locally, and then it can get the tag British wine. And while I haven't seen British wine for as long as I can remember, BC wine that isn't British Columbian wine, it's a bit dodgy. So let's remember who the companies are that are trying to deceive the punters. Vincor International, Andrew Peller, and the Mark Antony Group. Shame on you guys for being a bit deceptive. Okay, next up we have the spotlight. As I said, we're going to be looking at low alcohol wine or wines with low alcohol in them. Technically speaking, in the EU, there is names for wines that have got levels of alcohol in it. For example, if the drink has between 0 and 0.05% alcohol, it's considered alcohol-free. That's one. Between 0.05% and 0.5%, it's called de-alkalized. Between 0.5 and 1.2 is the official name low alcohol. So if you use the word low alcohol and the wine's got more than 1.2% in it, it's not technically correct. Between 1.2 and 5.5%, it's called reduced alcohol. I know I use the word wine to describe those other drinks. To be classed as a wine, it must have a minimum alcohol level of 8.5%, except for some German wines which are allowed to have 6.5% ABV. That's alcohol by volume. There's a number of ways of achieving wines with low alcohol. Note, not the word low alcohol wine. Wines with low alcohol. But some wines are naturally low. For example, in countries near 50 degrees latitude, where the amount of energy from the sun is so low, often the wines have naturally low sugar levels, and this converts to wines with low alcohol. Alcohol levels of 10 to 11 degrees is quite common for England and Germany. Often these cool climate wines have racy acidity, and this is often tempered by leaving some of the sugar unfermented in the wine. The unfermented sugar hides the acidity, but also keeps the alcohol low, and that's one way of producing wines with low alcohol. An extreme example of this is Moscato d'Asti, which is 5.5% alcohol, and it's a pretty nice example of this, where there's still loads of that grapey, sugary sweetness there in the wine. Moscato d'Asti has a potential alcohol of around 10% if it was fermented to dry. But other less extreme versions include Asti Spumante and many top dessert wines where the sugar levels are more important than the alcohol level in the wine. There are, of course, other ways of reducing alcohol in wine. The easiest and simplest is simply to add water to the wine during alcoholic fermentation. This practice is frowned upon in Europe, but in America, where the alcohol levels can be excessive in some regions, it's not uncommon. There are other ways of lowering alcohol, and this is generally done by removing the alcohol. These include spinning cone, reverse osmosis, vacuum distillation, and low pressure evaporation under inert gas, which is sort of like vacuum distillation. Whatever method is used, wines with their alcohol levels reduced or removed leaves the wine in a less stable state. As such, these wines need to be treated with extra effort and hygiene standards to ensure the wine is in its best possible condition. Right, now next week we're going to be looking at the different mechanical methods of removing alcohol that we just mentioned before, spinning cone, reverse osmosis, and vacuum distillation. But before we jump into our interview, let's have another clue in our mystery region. Now the first set of clues, quite tricky, but the second set of clues should be a wee bit more helpful to you. So here goes. The area's chalky soil and cool climate combine to create conditions of being theoretically too far north to ripen grapes properly. It has only three main grape varieties. These are Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and Pinot Meunier. Right, that should give it away for some of you guys. If it hasn't, I'm going to give you the answers after the interview, which is coming up next. So let's have a listen to what Enrico Rivetto has to say about Barolo and his wines. Hi, I'm here in Barolo with Enrico Rivetto. How are you, Enrico?
Very good.
What we're going to do is we're going to taste some of your wines and have you talk about it a wee bit and just give us a feeling about Barolo and your winery as well. Before we do that, how big is your winery?
We actually, in hectares, we have 35 hectares of extension. 20 hectares are vineyards and the rest are hazelnuts and some small woods and everything. Considering the size of how many bottles we produce per year, is around between 100,000 and 120,000 bottles per year. That's what we consider medium-small winery, like size, in this area.
Yeah. Who's the big wineries here?
The biggest winery probably is Terra del Barolo, that is a big cooperative.
Yep.
Because here there is also this kind of big company where all the small producers give the grapes to this big cooperative.
Yep. What about private companies?
Private companies, I think Fontana Fredda.
Oh, I saw them on the way in.
Exactly. This is the biggest number of hectares in the Barolo area.
Okay.
Like private.
Yep. Okay. All right. Let's have a look at the wines. You've given me a wine. It's quite an unusual one. What's the grape variety?
That's a very unusual wine, as a unique, and it's called Nascetta. Mm-hmm. That's the grape variety. And as I told you before, it was quite common to find it before the World War II, after it was completely disappeared. And the University of Torino, they studied and they attested that this Nascetta, this grape variety, is indigenous from Barolo area. So when we knew that, we start to experiment and plant it and try to understand what could be the reaction and effects on and the quality of the wines, if it could be good. We think it's very good grape variety, also in meaning of the possibility to be aged. So we start to produce and to plant and produce. And this grape variety is very important because it's a semi-aromatic grape variety. The smell and the bouquet, it reminds the tropical fruits like bananas or ananas usually. For us, this wine is a kind of challenge because our knowledge about these wines is not big, because is only six producers now they are producing this this wine, so we don't have a big also comparison with other wines. In the next 3-4 years, there will be around 20-25 producers, so that will be better. And it will become a DOC. From this year, will be called Lange Nascetta DOC. Actually, it's Lange Bianco because it's not recognized yet, but it will be very shortly.
When I tasted it, it reminded me a lot of a Viognier with a lovely peachy apricot notes.
Yeah, because there are some aromas who are in common with this kind of semi-aromatic grape variety.
Sure. Not big in the acidity. The acidity is quite low.
Because of the young vineyards, of course, it depends also of the vintage, but I think it's basically it is, the fact that the acidity should be more intense is because this is a new vineyard. So that's my second harvest of this. So we have to consider that after the fourth and the fifth harvest, we can have interesting and in quality on the structure, and we have complete wine. The first two or three are a little bit more difficult. But, you know, just to give you an idea about the potential of these grapes.
So how do you pronounce it? Nascetta?
Nascetta.
Nascetta.
Or there's two ways. If you say in Italian ways, Nascetta. If you say in our dialect, in Piemontese dialect, is Nascetta.
Nascetta.
Yeah, it's up to you.
I'll go for Nascetta.
Okay. It's easier, maybe.
Yeah. It is very much like an Albarino or a Viognier style, quite fleshy. The alcohol is only, what, 13%?
13% of
it. Yeah, but it feels fuller and richer, which is nice.
I think in the future we will improve our knowledge of this wine and of this grape, how also the reaction, considering the weather, the drain and everything. So, but we need time.
Yep.
And wine, always we need time. So we have to be patient.
And when did you say the DOC is coming through?
This year.
This year?
This harvest.
They should
be approved in end of August. So I hope that, because when we be recognized like DOC, we have more power in our sides, you know, to show also to the customers that we have DOC. Is not because on the Lange Bianco you can have many grape variety. In fact, this Lange Bianco is only 100% Nascetta grape. But if we have a Lange Nascetta DOC, everybody knows that is DOC.
And you can't. You haven't written the.
It's written here. It's written on the bottom. Produced by Nascetta grapes.
Is that
because
the,
it's not. We have to follow the laws. So
yeah,
Nascetta is bigger.
You must be only Italian following the laws. So
you know that nobody.
My drive through from Turin.
Yeah, yeah. But we are in the north of Italy. And we are sometimes following the rules. If you go in the south, it is a different story. But, you know, that's maybe another.
Do they follow the rules better in the south?
Not less. It's just you go to Naples and you will see. You can just stand on the street and you will see that everything is different. But, you know, they have also good wines there. Different people.
Yeah, sure. Okay, what's the second one we've got?
The second one that we're going to taste is the Barbera d'Alba Zio Nando 2007. Mm-hmm. Is I can say you something about this single vineyard, because it is a single vineyard, and Zio Nando is the name of the vineyards. We take the name of my father's uncle, because Zio in Italian language it means uncle, and Nando is the nickname of Ferdinando, and it is this guy over there on the right side with the white shirt. This guy which was planted this vineyard in the 1944. So that was an old vineyards, and is a limited production of between 5,000 and 7,000 bottles per year. There is a very high selection in the vineyards, so we are cutting the 40-50% of the grapes. And not only, we are cutting also the down part of the grape, because in the down part of the grape is a concentrated more acidity. And the Barbera grape is genetically very rich of acidity, so we don't want too much, because otherwise it's difficult to drink, it's not so well balanced. So in all our wines, we try to find a way to have well-balanced wines. And in this area, especially in the Lange Hills and in Piemonte in general, is not very easy because the quantity of tannins is very high. And not all the tannins are good, and not always too aggressive tannins are good. So we try to have well-balanced wines.
So you've got a normal grape cluster.
Yeah, you have a normal grape cluster. We cut the part, how you say, the down part of the grape.
The bottom half.
Yeah, the bottom half. Because there, in this part, is concentrated of more acidity.
Is that because it doesn't see as much sunlight?
No, it's just genetical and physiological things from the tree, and especially from the Barbera. Mm-hmm. We don't do for the Nebbiolo that. We don't do either for the Dolcetto. It's just because the Barbera has more acidity. It's just genetical characteristic, more acidity. So not always this more acidity is good.
Yep.
And so we are just cutting the down part so to have a more well-balanced acidity and so that we can have a pleasant wine.
I've noticed you've chilled the Barbera down.
No, I chilled this Barbera only because outside is 30 Celsius.
Yeah.
And I hate to drink at 30 Celsius the wines.
Yeah, it's
so
too hot.
So these wines, it was just, 10 minutes in the fridge and just to have the temperature at 16, 17. And now you feel more cold because outside is very hot.
Yeah.
But... And especially for our wines where you have a lot of alcohol, if you drink at 30 Celsius, the alcohol evaporates for first.
Yeah.
And you feel only the alcohol.
Yeah,
so I hate it.
Yeah.
So I prefer to have a little cool and in the glasses getting warmer. So you have a better taste, I think, more pleasant taste. And of course, for this Barbera, we age a little bit in French oak barrel and a little bit in Slavonian oak barrel. As you saw from in the cellar, we have two types of oak.
Mm.
We have a Slavonian oak. And we have a French oak for different use. I'm not an extremist of the oak. I just need the oak like the salt in the salad. Let's say we need to age the wines in the oak barrel.
Is that to soften the tannins or to get...
It depends what we want. It depends of the interpretation of the vintage. If we have a full-bodied vintage with a great structure Barbera, we prefer to age more in the French oak barrel. If we have a medium body, we prefer to have a Slavonian oak barrel because it giving more, the Slavonian oak giving more slowly the tannins and more dry.
The Slavonian oak barrels were quite big though. They were bigger
3,000
than...
3,000 liters. 3,000 liters. 3,000 usually. Liters. But
yeah.
You can have also bigger or smaller, of course.
Yeah. Is it a function of the size of the barrel?
Of also the size of the barrel give a different taste because the relation wine-oak in a smaller barrel is higher than a bigger oak. But usually in our tradition, the 3,000 liters oak barrel were the most common because it's the right size for aging.
Okay. You said earlier that the barrels, you use them for up to 15 years, the Slovenian.
This big Slovenian, 15 years.
Why is
more
that?
Or less. Because, the wood is getting less, survive more than the French one. The French one, after between three and five years, they're giving more taste, the transpiration. Because we have not to forget that the oak is not only, we use oak only because there is a taste of something. Because there is a transpiration, the breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a small apport of oxygen that we have, small every day, very small quantity, that build some, we call oxygen bridge. So there are some chemical process which the evolution of the flavor can be getting better and better. So it's thanks to this apport to oxygen that can give the chance to have a better flavor and evoluted wines, like Barolos, for example.
Yeah.
And for that reason that we need oak. And the oak have to be always clean And the pore, I think it's called pores have to be always quite free of dirty things and everything, because it needs to breathe. Mm-hmm. And in the French oak, the breathing is very fast. And so the pores are getting more dirty immediately. For the bigger wooden barrel is different. Okay. And this Slavonian oak is different. Different oak.
Would you say your Barbera d'Alba? What does d'Alba mean?
Alba is the name of, let's call, the capital of the wine region. It's a town. Mm. It's a town which is 30,000 people, and that's the bigger city of in the area. And it's important because in the past, in our tradition, if you want to sell something, you have to go to Alba. If you want to buy something, you have to go to the Alba market. You know, it was a point of referment for all the hills around. And for that reason, that all the DOC are mostly of them, they take the name of this.
Because a lot of the towns on the way in, when I was driving in, had Alba.
Barbera, yeah, of course, because they are small and they want to be, you know, connected with Alba. They are more famous also because Alba is famous for the truffle, the white truffles. Oh. And when I show you before this, our soil rich of clay and a lot of calcium, it's like gray or white, our soil. It's because also it gives the possibility to find here truffles, white truffles, outstanding. The flavor is unbelievable. And that's because Alba is famous for that, not only for the wine, but also for the white truffles. And so Alba was famous always for that. And this was an attraction also in the past. So for that reason, for the historical reason, the Dolcetto is becoming Dolcetto d'Alba, the DOC. And the Barbera is becoming Barbera d'Alba, the DOC. Of course, if you go northern, close to Asti, that is another area where they produce always wines from Piemonte, they have Barbera d'Asti, but it's different wine.
Yeah, yeah.
They are different characteristics. Here, all our wines have more characteristic, they come from a very clay soil. In the Asti region, they have more sandy soil. So our wines are more heavy, the structure is very good, the body is very intense. But in the Asti region, they are more less able to be aged, but more fruity, more pleasant immediately. Mm. But that's two different areas, two different characteristics.
A lot of people say that, you know, heavier clay-based soils produce a heavier style of wine.
Heavy style of wine, it doesn't mean that the wine is heavy. You know, we are here, and that's my philosophy of making wines, is to try to find a way to respect our terroir so and have well-balanced and pleasant wine. How we can have these well-balanced and pleasant wines with such a great concentration and such a great quantity of tannins. We just use the temperature in the cellar, the right temperature during the fermentation, and to find the way to understand the vintage, the year. If we understand the characteristic of this vintage, we are able to take a decision who try to have well-balanced wines. Well-balanced wines for me is alcohol, acidity, fruit, and tannins have to be in well-balanced. So this Barbera that you tasted is close to 15% of alcohol.
Well, but it doesn't feel it.
You don't feel it.
No.
So it means that I try to have more drinkable wines without using nothing special, nothing chemical or particular methods. It's just to use our knowledge and use the right oak in the right time, pick the grapes in the right moment, and use the right temperature in the cellar. If you have a good temperature, if we can be able to extract the right tannins in the right time, because we know that. We know when we can extract the right tannin. The problem is to have the healthy grape where we can extract the right tannins. If we have sick grapes with fungus or something like that, how we can extract the good things? We can't. We extract bad things.
Okay, you get rot.
Yeah, of course. If you have botrytis on the grape, when we pick it, of course we can extract botrytis taste, not other good things. So for us, it's very important to have a healthy and good grape, mature, in the cellar. When it's in the cellar, it's easier. I'm less worried, because I'm always worried when the grapes are outside, always. I think problems of everybody, because when in old agriculture, when the grapes is outside, under the weather, and the hail, rain, sun, non devi entrare.
I was talking to a producer in Macon yesterday, and he lost half his harvest to hail.
You know, that's the things that makes us different, like all the other production. If you produce clothes, tables, or something else, you always have the materials to do that. Oh, you get wrong. Okay, I will do tomorrow, and I set up and fix it another way. Here, not. If one year that you work all the year for this amount of when you harvest for the crop, you have a bad weather, you've lost everything. Mm. So you have to wait the other year. You cannot do anything else. So that's our bigger problem. But, you know, all the agriculture is like that.
Okay. And what we're going to do is we'll wrap it up here, next week we'll taste the Barolos.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast. I actually like that type of podcast where we were tasting and chatting away. We did some podcasts ages ago where I was tasting the wines and we were going through the wines quite mechanically. And I found I didn't really like that. I find drinking wine is more of a sensual thing rather than an ear listening thing. But chatting to Enrico with his wines in the background, I think worked quite nicely. So I'm probably going to do a few more like that. Well, one more anyway, at least, because next week we're going to be talking to Enrico about his red wines and the Barolos in the family, so to speak. Okay, we're almost finished now for another week, but let's give you the answer to our mystery region. It was, of course, Champagne. I did try and make it a bit tricky since it's one of those big obvious regions, but here are the clues again. Champagne was the first region to make sparkling wines, hence the name became synonymous with the finest. It's France's only major single appellation region and has only three main grape varieties, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay and Pinot Meunier. The region consists of three wine growing areas. From the eastern Paris is the main valley in Rance, south Epernay is the Côte de Blanc and the southern extension the Côte de Cessenay. And 100 kilometres south is the Aube. Much of the appellation, including the better crus, are situated on the slopes of hills. The area's chalky soil and cool climate combine to create conditions to making Champagne a place that theoretically is too far north to ripen grapes properly, just as in the case in southern England. However, the precarious nature of the weather means that traditional Champagne is blended not only from different villages, but also from several vintages. That's the clues again. As I said, I did have to make it a wee bit tricky for you guys because it is a big common region. But now let's finish up with our quote. And this is a proverb quoted by Plato, although I don't think he originally said it. Plato was a dude who liked to wear bed linen a lot, if you remember. Sorry. But anyway, here's the quote. In vino veritas, in wine is truth. I quite like that. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.